Hi, my name is Karina Riedmüller, and I'm the founder of Being Carried, a coaching program for highly sensitive and highly creative people who are struggling to find their own path in this world. I'm here to help them create their own authentic lifestyles. For my blog on beingcarried.com, I interview highly sensitive people who are very courageous and brave and who live their lives in a very unconventional manner. It's about people who step out with courage, trust, and clarity, and who empower others to do the same. This time I met up with one of the greatest singers I have known, Kara Johnstedt. Kara was born in Minnesota in the United States and moved to Germany as a young woman. Today she's working internationally as a singer-songwriter and founder of a unique voice program called Voice Your Essence. Only a year ago, she teamed up with yoga teacher Sita Menon, and together they founded a center for yoga and voice work called Yoga Voice Berlin. On a sunny afternoon this fall, Kara invited me to sit down with her in her apartment. We had some tea and chocolates together as we talked about Kara's path as a highly sensitive creative who wants to change the world. In the past 20 or 30 years, Kara has not only published many albums and created a successful business, she has also built a strong community of very sensitive and creative people. Oftentimes, highly sensitive people tend to be very shy and full of doubt, which causes most of them to live beneath their full potential. Kara is one of the most successful people I know. She really knows how to keep her sensitivity and strength in balance. Yet, I have always had the funny feeling that, as a kid, she used to be quite different, more like a shy and precious bird. I wanted to know more about this tender bird and how it evolved to be so strong and so clear and so vulnerable, all at the same time. Has it been a long journey for her to get to where she is today?
It has been a long journey. It's been a long path and a beautiful one. And as a child, I was less a bird than a hermit crab. I think I almost never spoke.
Okay.
I was incredibly quiet. Mm-hmm. And I was very, very shy. And I read lots of books. And I was very withdrawn. And every time I opened my mouth to speak, I was not very logical. So the people wanted me to get into discussions which were more like debates, and I always just sensed very poetic moments. And my truth was always like similar to how I am now. It's just now I'm able to stand in that truth. And now I'm able to understand that that's my path as a songwriter and a poet and a visionary, that I am very sensitive and feel and think different, and that's okay, right? But as a kid, of course, somebody would say, like, why didn't you take your math books to school? And I would say, yeah, because when I went outside, the lilacs were blossoming, and I stopped to smell the lilacs, and they were so beautiful that I went back into the house to get a glass of water to put the lilacs in because I wanted you, Mom, to smell them because they're so beautiful. And then the bus came and I ran out the door and I forgot my books.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kara Elizabeth just said, this is not okay.
Yeah. And it's really amazing for me, and then the journey of being a child who was incredibly misunderstood, I think. Very deeply loved, I'm sure, somewhere, but I always felt very misunderstood. And I think my coming to understand myself came in my late 20s or something. I mean, it's really a long time that I was really struggling with always feeling like a misfit. For those who, you're only hearing my voice, but, you know, my eyes were a little crooked when I was a kid, so I had these really funny glasses, and then I was acting, and I felt like a princess, but I was only doing the roles of, you know, whatever the good friend who was the character, and I was like, yeah, but I feel like I want to be the princess who meets the prince. And they're like, no, you're the witch who gets to ride on a broom with her face green and black. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
I can totally relate to that, because you know what they did to me when I was a teenager? What?
So I told her the story of me as a 15-year-old and how we worked on Romeo and Juliet at school. I told her about how I had always wanted to be Juliet. I knew her part by heart, but my teacher thought I'd actually make such a great nurse. I guess he saw that motherly figure in me. It was kind of relieving for me to hear that I hadn't been the only one feeling so misunderstood as a teenager. I'm sure that hardly anyone would cast Kara to be merely a witch or a nurse nowadays. So when did things change? And how did they change exactly?
I moved from America to Europe and to Berlin. And I think that was a very big time for me because I had been at the university and studying theater, and I had studied acting and I had sung and I had done all these things, but I landed in a country where my voice, which I had not, you know, which I had, as far as I remember it, I had used really proficiently in acting and in theater. So when I was able to get a spotlight on me and I was in a safe place of a dark, dark theater, and the theater was dark, and then I had some director who was, normally most of them were idiots, but it didn't matter because I had this place where I could feel and be, and it was recognized. And the more I felt and the more I was able to be, you know, the more applause I got in that environment, right? So it's kind of like we are the circus people in a way. Like people pay a lot of money to go see a strip and bare our souls. We need it because that's who we are. And they get off on it, basically. And then we go into the normal world, like we just want to go to the bank and say, hi, I'd like to open an account. And we say, like, hi, God, you painted the walls. It's really, and I'd like to open an account. And they think we're like absolutely nutty. Anyway, so when I got to Germany, my father had an apartment here by chance. And so I kind of landed. And it was such a different world. There was a wall around the city, which gave it the crazy quality, which I don't think I would find anywhere else. I'd done some film and theater also in New York. Berlin had the big city feeling, so we had the opera and we had the theaters and we had the conservatory for music and we had the bigness of it, but it was a village because of the wall. And everybody who was here, a lot of them were lost. It was a Peter Pan world. It really was. The buildings were not painted, many of them. There was still coal used in the wintertime for heating. There was a very strong music scene, and the musicians would all hang together. And you'd have, like, a lot of the young guys that were my age were the ones, they didn't have to serve in the military. Now, this doesn't seem important now, but the ones in West Germany at that time were doing military service or, you know, social service or whatever. So the people that were here, there were a lot of freedom thinking, you know, very, very deep souls. That's how I remember it. And because we couldn't leave, because there was this wall, there was a lot of wonderful times spent at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning in the middle of Berlin playing guitar and writing. And because the dollar to, at that time it was D-Mark to the marks, was such a good currency conversion, I basically had to make, like, my apartment was 140 D-Mark, and which was, I think, $40 or $50, right? So I basically, if I did one beautiful concert a month, I was like, I could live a simple life, right? Which is pretty amazing. So that time gave me a lot of freedom. And at the same time, nobody could really understand me. And I couldn't really understand them. So I spoke German, but not very well. And I think it was like going into exile. And in that, those early years, I had to choose. Either I'm going to be the victim and I'm going to kind of get sucked into depression, probably, or I'm going to be a survivor and start speaking languages which I really understand. And one of them was, of course, singing and music. And then the other one was writing. So suddenly, the way I thought was, my first record was brought out in 1987 for RCA. And the way I thought, in this wacky way that I looked, because I didn't think I was wacky, people were like, your clothes look really cool. And I'm like, oh, wow, I just thought I was wearing a dress. But I would like sometimes just take a tablecloth and then paint it and then sew it into a dress because I thought it was fun to like, I thought it was, I literally like, you know, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. That's what I did. Like, I just would make things and wear them because number one, I didn't have any money at that time. And number two, I didn't want to go buy ugly, stupid things. So I just, so I would just make these really weird things. And so that was actually appreciated.
Yeah.
My misfit suddenly became, I was an artist, right? I mean, yeah. My misfit was I became a professional artist. So I got relabeled into something that was acceptable, at least, you know, not by the whole society, but at least a lot of people paid lots of money to see the misfit, odd artist.
Like many artists, Kara has a very unique way of styling and dressing herself. She always wears light colors and exotic patterns matched up with basics and spiced up with mostly golden earrings. Clothes oftentimes express and represent who you are on the outside. They show your identity and your individuality even when you're not saying a single word. I was wondering if she had always been interested in creating her own clothing style and how it was actually possible to be an individual with an individual clothing style in West Berlin at that time.
I think, I mean, clothes can really express a lot of who you are. I mean, you know, I've always found like I've gone in two directions. The one is when I was very young, I would just, grab a tablecloth, paint it, sew up the sleeves, make these bat wings. And I mean, basically no pattern, right? Just put a hole in the top. I would take tights as a dancer and, you know, you cut out the crotch, you put it over your arm, so suddenly it's a shirt. You're like, and now you see it like it's a new thing to do. And I'm like, wow, we did that 35 years ago, right? And then I have another phase, which I've been in the last couple of years, which is basically just keep, you know, one or two, like just keep basic colors, you know, basic things so that I have a lot of work and a lot of projects so that it just makes life easier because, I don't know, whenever I look in my closet, if there's too many polka dots, plaids, flowers and everything, I get so caught, again, in the lilac bush moment, right? I get just so, like, caught and like, oh my God, these colors are so beautiful that I forget to sit at the piano and practice my concert. So it's like now I have the basic black, basic white, two pairs of jeans, you know, try to buy some big earrings, and then it's all good. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's my story. Yeah.
So when did you come to Berlin, actually?
I came to Berlin when I was 20 years old.
So
it was 1985. It was May of 1985. And the world was very different then because people, I think we've really forgotten, internet has become so normal for us that we've forgotten what it was like for somebody to go across the ocean with one suitcase, have no place really, you know, to work or to stay. My father did have an apartment, which I stayed at in the beginning. And again, the way the system worked here was totally different from the American system. So in America, we had a newspaper like Variety or whatever, they would post the auditions and then you'd go to audition as an artist. You would say, okay, I have my monologue, I have my two songs. That wasn't like that in Germany. It was state theater. You had to go through a, you know, cranium basically to say you were an artist. I mean, you had to get some kind of a, you know, check mark, you know, oh, well, you had your this degree and that degree and this, the whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, and I think really the hardest thing was, and the good thing was a lot of different viewpoints, also world politics, etc. coming from America, I don't think that my, even though I had gone to the university, I don't think that my horizons were as wide as understanding the whole international political spheres that are happening, that were happening in Europe at that time, and still are. But I think the hardest thing was I was in isolation. There's no bookstore that I could go to get a book. There's no, I mean, now it's in the internet. I at least am fortunate to have my mother tongue be the language that most people communicate in now, meaning that I can quickly write and share and be. At that time, I mean, there were only, of course, I was in Germany and there are only German bookshops. And maybe there was one tiny little English bookshop, but they only had maybe, I don't know, at the most 100 books, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, when I went back to America, my whole suitcase was full. I would come back with like 10 books, and that was for me gold. I mean, literally gold. And then also, everything was just a little bit harder. The natural food stores were not part of the supermarket. They were a different place. The world music and jazz was not really part of the normal record store. It was very, you know, we had a shop only for world music because it wasn't part of the normal music business, more or less, right? So we've forgotten how much we have transformed and evolved. Number one, as a city, because the wall fell down. And I think for me, that was a very big point as an artist. That was a very big turning point as a, you know, highly sensitive person too, because it, you realize that everything is possible, number one, and you realize that somewhere deep down the visions that you have can come true. I mean, that Berlin, I was really there. I saw the people streaming into the streets. You could feel it was an amazing change in the air. And you felt, number one, how lucky you are that the military didn't do something crazy and shoot. But number two, how empowering it was to see people literally climbing up walls, chiseling down walls. I mean, people take it as so normal nowadays, but it wasn't normal. It was huge. And I think for me, this city is a city that has given rebirth to itself so often. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I feel as an artist, that here I can really, it's really the city that I feel so at home in, because you can, in a way, resurrect time and time again. Mm-hmm. It's very strange. I've never felt that so much in another city as in Berlin. I feel drawn to have this be my base, and then I can travel internationally for work. But it's history really has a profound effect. Also, the whole French, English, American, Russian, the East and the West, and you know, this whole thing, it's in the air, this constant destruction and then being rebuilt and then destroyed and rebuilt, destroyed, rebuilt. Yeah. So that's when I came in 1985, and now we have 30 years later.
So you spend more than half of your life here.
I have.